This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:47 in the morning. You're with myself, Julian Ng, as well as Khoo Soo Chuang on The Morning Run, and we're bringing you today's biggest business news. Coming up on The Breakfast Grill, we are going to have Dato Sri Ong Kar Chuan, who is Second Minister of International Trade and Industry, and Sharad is going to check up with him on the kind of policy we have with regard to China, which is such a big deal over this past few days because our Prime Minister Najib has been in China doing a lot of deals, and he's going to explore whether China is more than a trading partner.
Well, I also hope that Sharad talks about MCA and its declining importance to the Chinese demographic in the country. You know, they used to be, well, they're supposed to be the voice of the Chinese, but their representation in the parliament is at its lowest ever ebb. And it's interesting because the DAP, who doesn't want to be seen as the Chinese voice, it wants to be seen as a unified voice, is now at its highest ebb in parliament. But of course, that might all change in 2 years' time when elections comes.
Mm-hmm. And a very apt question to be put to Dato Sri Ong, because he is the Secretary General of the MCA. And talking about China and things Chinese, a lot of deals being done between Malaysia and China because of, you know, the number one salesman and business development manager for Malaysia, PM Najib himself, you know, going to China and garnering 144 billion ringgit worth of deals.
Yeah, so the newspapers have gone berserk and, you know, they're all going on with how this is a landmark deal. You know, my question is, right, in what it's clear what Malaysia gains from China. It's unclear what China gains from Malaysia. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, China has been going around with a checkbook, right? Going to all over the world. It started with some of the African countries. I think it wasn't too long ago that China forgave the debt of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe owed China some debt, forgave the debt, and Zimbabwe approved the usage of renminbi in that country. And not to mention other African countries going in there, opening up its checkbooks to build infrastructure and so on. So this is something that is pretty global. And if you imagine a country with so much money, with a few trillion dollars in its foreign exchange reserve, plus all those capital and money accumulated throughout the years, the two decades of very high growth, I don't think it is surprising that China is putting its weight behind the geopolitical and socioeconomic environment all across the region.
Yeah, I think these are very apt questions because Malaysia's visit to China comes hot on the heels of Rodrigo Duterte's visit to Beijing and his very clear and obvious pivot towards China. Now, of course, as we know in America, the U.S. elections will be happening in a few days' time. We don't as yet know who's going to win the elections because both Trump and Clinton are head-to-head. But what we do know is that both are quite – well, we don't quite know each other's stance on ASEAN, the TPPA, and specifically Malaysia. So is Prime Minister Najib hedging his bets in terms of these deals he's doing with China? How important will Malaysia factor in China's interest in ASEAN? How do we in Malaysia align when both China and the US, you know, start increasing their conflict, in not just in terms of the South China territorial dispute, but when the Chinese economic framework comes up head-to-head against the TPPA? And where do we stand on the TPPA? Because we don't know whether that's going to go through or not.
Well, the official stance is that we like it, but the United States now kind of changing tack because the presidential nominees are not really warming up to the TPP. But, you know, my thinking is that as an ASEAN citizen, I would say money can buy my love.
Correct.
If China wants to give me money, you know, I'll take it any day. It's just that from a longer term viewpoint, how does Malaysia treat, you know, the kind of activity that's going on in the South China Sea? I mean, we really have to read between the headlines, right? All these headlines about Bank Negara setting up a ringgit renminbi framework is just the tip of the iceberg.
It is.
It's just a facilitation about something bigger that's going on.
Yeah, it's probably quite true to say that China wants partners around the world. It also wants supplies. It wants resources. It also wants to increase its position in the global economic framework in terms of its currency and the yuan. Maybe it wants to displace the US dollar as the global reserve currency. You don't know. It also wants to have a territorial, it basically wants land in the South China Sea to have its basis and its viewpoint. So, I mean, where do we stand on all this?
So, you know, what are all these deals? I mean, you're talking about $144 billion. I read of this other story about BHS Industry, which partners China nuclear industry or Huangxing Construction building a green technology park. Is there a kind of quid pro quo here?
Exactly. What does Malaysia have to concede to China in return for 144 billion ringgit? You know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, Jules. If I give you money, I expect something from you. And, you know, you look at it, we're buying Navy vessels from China. We are allowing the Chinese consortiums to come in and, you know, basically build rail links.
We get the infrastructure, right?
We get the infrastructure. But
and what do they get? They get this money goes back to them because what they will do is they will use a lot of this money to buy into their own consultants, to their own machinery, their own infrastructure, and export it back to Malaysia. So they get something out of this as well.
Well, their corporate interests come into places like Malaysia and establish some kind of influence and superiority. We're allowing them to do stuff in the Malacca Gateway port. There's now a commercial bank license for ICBC. There's also stuff going on in the East Coast Economic Region with solar cell plants. There's Pekan Pahang with Green Technology Park. You know, stuff like that. We're allowing, well, Matrade is doing deals with Alibaba. Don't know what they're going to do down the line because it's just an MOU. And there's also Bird's Nest Extracts as well, R&D going on. You know, Aladdin Group and Soo Chow. You know, there's a lot of stuff going
on. That's huge business, Bird's Nest. A lot of people consume Bird's Nest soup. But, you know, Chuang, I'm just wondering how this would actually energize our economy. Because if you look at, I think one of the key indicators to look at is the Purchasing Managers Index, which is something that tracks the intentions of purchasing manager across the country. And it has been in the doldrums for over the last few years.
That's right. And the latest Nikkei PMI data shows Malaysian manufacturing at 47.2. And as we know, any reading below 50 is kind of like negative and almost recessionary, depending how long the trend is. So it is the lowest since June, below the long-run average of 49.5, and as well as below the September reading of 48.6. So it does seem as if we are trending down. We are becoming less competitive, less people are buying our stuff. And basically, do we read into Malaysia's pivot towards China as China being Malaysia's economic white knight in more ways than one?
6 minutes to 8 a.m., Joe Low and his relatives are fighting for feature of 1MDB-linked assets. I guess, Chuang, the question to be asked is that if you had to squirrel away money that's not yours, what's the best way to do it than to pass it on to your dad and your brother and sister?
Yeah, so this basically is the theme behind a Singapore Straits Times story yesterday, which suggests that 1MDB and all the economic and financial distress and travails that have ensued as a result is the real reason why the Prime Minister is in China. And I don't know how much of that is true, but it is interesting because when you look at it...
That sounds very conspiratorial.
It sounds very conspiratorial, but it's made the Singapore Straits Times. So, no, sorry, I beg your pardon, South China Morning Post.
Ah.
South China Morning Post. Okay, so, I mean, you know, the Joe Lau billions have bought $100 million interest in EMI, the publishing business. They bought a $35 million Bombardier jet. They've bought a $200 million stake in the Park Lane Hotel, as well as other condos in New York and other art pieces, which, of course, have all made the headlines.
And the 1MDB ecosystem doesn't just stop there because ex-BSI banker Yeo Jia-wei is also being investigated for, quote-unquote, secret profits, about $7 million worth of secret profits being hidden away, and Yeo himself has apparently amassed a fortune of about $26 million for a guy as young as 32.
Yeah, so he used to work at BSI, then I think he left the business to join Joe Lau as his private financial advisor. And this is
that's almost $1 million a year for every year that you've been alive.
It's great, isn't it? It's like being a premiership footballer. So the thing is, you know, so here's the connection, right? So this guy, Yeo Jia-wei, he used to work for BSI, and guess what? Separately, in the parliament yesterday, Second Finance Minister Dato' Johari saying SRC International, which is a subsidiary of 1MDB, is not to be discussed in public anymore because there are all kinds of problems going on there. He's gone on record to say that companies, you know, suffered from poor governance, weak management, and a murky outlook. And the money that they have is now being kept at BSI, right? So that's the connection. And BSI is now under investigation. So here's the thing, because SRC International owes money to Co-op. Co-op lent the money. And every year, these bond payments are getting bigger and bigger in size. I think next year is going to be something like 672 million ringgit over the whole course of the year.
Yeah.
That's not cheap. How does SRC pay for it? And how systemic a risk will this be to Malaysia? And how much of that is in connection to Prime Minister Najib's visit to China?
Yeah, I think if you have a problem, one, not talking about it is not a solution. We have Axis REIT manager, head of investment, Siva Shankar, saying that the country's image of a corruption nation has to be dealt with. Otherwise, Malaysia would not be a choice investment destination. But I guess the Chinese have a different view. Moving along, the IPO story is gathering steam in Malaysia, Chuang.
Yeah, so, okay. So here's the thing. Yesterday we discussed about how Edra Global Power might be relisting within the next 2 years. We also talked about how their age profile of those power assets might be questionable, as well as their cash flow characteristics. Now, the latest story is that, you know, Edra Global might not be listing in Malaysia after all, and they might be listing elsewhere. Maybe in China. Who knows?
Maybe in China. Wow. I don't know. I always view that investors are very smart people and they would be able to sniff out a good deal from a bad one. But not only Edra is trying to list, but QSR as well, trying to raise apparently $500 million.
Yeah. So, you know, intriguingly, our Malaysian IPO pipeline looks quite healthy because we've got QSR relisting essentially their fast food retail franchise business. They've got Pizza Hut in there as well. And this comes also on the back of Yum Brands listing in China. Of course, Yum Brands is the biggest F&B chain in the country, also in China. Now, the China theme is very strong today. They've got about 7,200 restaurants, $7 billion in revenue. But they came out yesterday with quite a tepid response.
Well, we have the news coming up. And after the news, we have Dato' Sri Ong Kar Chuan, Second Minister of International Trade and Industry, on a breakfast grill. Sharad speaks to him. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.